Thank you, everyone, for coming this morning. You each were given a little note card at the door. And, oh, Bill got left out. We can't have that. There you go. There you go. So, and what that's for, no one's going to see it but you. And raise your hand if you need a pen or pencil. I have one. And you're going to get some pencils for people, please. He'll be right back with some writing utensils. And so, the idea is, with that, is to create an intention of what you would like to get from being here today. If the idea is for you to clarify why you're here. What do you want to get from it? Is it you have a question that wants to be answered? Do you want an insight about something you might do to help yourself feel better in some way? A healing, an insight, a reconnection, whatever. Just let you, during the meditation, which I'm just going to be playing the flute today instead of words, I would invite you to just kind of think about that. Why am I here? What would I really like to get? So it's not entirely passive. So you have an intention and a desire stated to the universe that you would like to get from being here. So just think about that. And then throughout the rest of this service meeting here, you can just, in the back of your mind, keep an ear listening for clues about what you wrote down. Any questions? Okay, so we always start with just slow diaphragm breathing, of course, to shift. And I'm reading a book on breathing right now, The Ancient Science and Art of Breathing, breath work and all that. And that's always been a big part of my private practice, is teaching people how to breathe fully and deeply. And this book, I'm wishing I had written it, because it takes it much deeper than that. And so just starting doing diaphragm breathing changes almost everything in your body, breathing in through the nose, particularly. And so I'm just going to always improvise when I play. I never know what is going to come out. And so let's take a little walk together, shall we? It's a beautiful day, and there's a little creek out there. And we can just imagine we're walking alongside that creek. There's nothing else around but us in the water. We come up on a little bench, sit down and listen. Thank you.
and gave everybody a card. You can just think.
Or insight about something about their health, or a better relationship with someone, a clue about how to make that better. You can just think about it. You don't have to write it down. So I'm going to start with just this one little leaf of California white sage. As research has shown, medical scientific research has shown, that exactly what indigenous people the world over have known for thousands of years is that this smell of a few herbs, especially sage, actually rids the air of all sorts of toxins, bacteria, viruses, fungi, molds, mildew, not to mention yucky thoughts floating around in the air, etc. And I love it when modern research confirms what indigenous people have known for a long, long time. Just recently, one of the Cherokee treatments became validated by scientific research. And the number one treatment for depression among the Cherokee, which is some of my ancestors, was to sit under a white pine tree. Go find the biggest white pine tree you can find and just sit down under, especially in the morning, you know, and don't be in a hurry. Spend an hour or so there. And I wanted to point out that everybody in the room can smell this now, right? Can you smell this in the back of the room? Yeah. Okay, well, it's coming back there in a second. It's just that one, I mean, like a fourth of the leaf is burnt, you know, and it's already spreading around the room. But anyways, the modern research on the white pine found that when the top leaves start getting sunshine on them and the tree starts respirating, absorbing the carbon dioxide and exhaling the oxygen, molecules are released from the trunk of the tree that cause euphoria in humans. So I always love it when the white scientists catch up with what our people have known for ever. And so also, just as when I was playing the flute is an improvisation, my talks are improvisations as well. In the present moment with you here today, I'm going to be listening right along with you to see what spirit brings out for us. I want to print up a t-shirt that says, "This isn't me," on it. You know, this isn't me. I just live in this shell. Like each of you, we live in these shells and we take it far too seriously. You know, we come and we go and we come and we go and we come and we go and we come and we go. And whatever little current crisis we're in that seems so all important, you know, taken in the grand scheme of things, is about as significant as the flutter of one butterfly's wing leaving the flowers. We have literally forever to get it right. So there's no hurry. We white folks think in terms of, especially men, of getting ahead, getting over those hurdles, da-da-da-da-da. Like I went to my first Sundance in 1996, yet I did not get that clear sign to dance until 3 years ago. I took care of the fires for 28 years. And there are people who Sundanced, had their first Sundance after my first Sundance, that are now Sundance Chiefs. That get ahead, kind of get accomplished, the credentials hanging on the wall mentality, you know. But boy, am I ever glad I waited. A little bit about what happens at a Sundance, and first of all, this will be very superficial. We don't talk about our ceremonies much, you know. Remember the word abracadabra? That used to actually induce magic and alter states of consciousness, but it became widely known and lost its power. So when you ask someone about a ceremony they just went to with their wives, they'll give you a very cursory answer, you know. And so Sundance is essentially an 8-day long ceremony, during which time none of us dancers are supposed to touch any water. We can have
various things in water, but we can't touch plain water, we can't shower or anything like that. But there are 13 sweat lodge ceremonies during that 8 days for the dancers. And so we're getting cleaned off every day multiple times, and so we don't get too smelly. The chief will say, get your wipes out if anybody's good smelling bad. And I've only heard that one. So, you might think, oh, that's a long time without a shower. And boy, it sure does feel good to get that shower after it's over with. But this was just last Sunday, you know, at this time, last Sunday, I was dancing in the harbor, you know, and at the Shawnee Reservation in Northeast Oklahoma. Our ceremonial leader is Hermas Lone Dog, a Lakota elder and chief who's been leading that Sundance for decades. And, very wise, kind gentleman. And, it's a prayer. All ceremonies are prayers. At one time I was at a Sundance taking care of the fire, and there was a female firekeeper, which is a little unusual at a Sundance. It's a very masculine affair in a lot of ways, but it's about men learning to become more feminine is what it's really about. But there was a woman tending the fire, and the firekeeper, the head guy with the fire, had a momentary lapse of respect and was very harsh with this lady, and I was taken aback, you know, and I talked to them about it after he settled down a little bit, and how contrary that was to all the teachings. And it made me wonder if I wanted to go back to that Sundance or not. And I bumped into this woman at a museum of agricultural implements, of all things, you know. I'm really into organic gardening and farming, and I was in this museum I stumbled upon. Georgia Historical Agricultural Implements. And here's this lady walks in, this firekeeper, you know, firetender. And I said, I'm sorry about what happened, you know, a month ago or so. And I'm curious, are you going to come back next year? She said, of course I'm coming back next year. You know, we go to ceremony to pray. We go to ceremony to pray. Everything else is insignificant. I go for my prayers. I like that. I've never forgotten that. A lot of people go to see what it's like. You're not going to get much out of it going to see what it's like. Yeah. You need to have something real serious you want to pray about when you go to a ceremony. You can't think of something serious you want to pray about, just watch the news. Plenty of people could use some prayers, planet-wide. And prayer, the concept of prayer certainly changed for me over the years. You know, I was still teaching Sunday school to sixth grade boys when I was 21 at the First Baptist Church in Nederland, Texas. And prayer was my list of to-do jobs for God, you know. I want this, I want that, I want this to happen, you know. And that's the way I thought about prayer, was, you know, you tell God what you want him to do and remind him what a great person you are, you know, and how you gave so much last Sunday and often played, you know, so you owe me one, buddy, you know, that kind of thing. But what I came to gradually understand is our source of life energy is that singular consciousness that we're all a part of. When we say we're all one, you know, it takes a while to really get that. We literally are all one. We just have these little shells on. The way I look at it is, in the very beginning, there was a singular state of consciousness. And consciousness, by definition, expands and unfolds. And God realized, I could just take these outer portions out here and break them up into individual consciousnesses and let them interact with one another and expand quicker that way. And I could exhale and create layers upon layers of different frequencies. And everybody's still got that connection back to me. We have this illusion of being separate entities, but it's all just me expanding, you know, faster about creating these individual entities to bump up against one another, like sandpaper, scraping each other a little bit to help us grow. And that to me is reassuring in a way, you know, it's what life is while this single state of consciousness is expanding. And we're in these physical shells for a really brief moment in time. And I also love thinking about all the other living things on this planet. And they're no different at all. A gnat is a little physical shell on a little spark of God, or it wouldn't have any life at all. And the wisest of all are the rocks. They've been there since the beginning. They've seen the whole thing unfold on the planet. And so when we put them in the fire and heat them up red hot, take them back to their original state. Then we take them in the lodge and we pour the sacred water on them and it goes into the air and us go back to our original state and come crawling out like newborn babes, starting a new life if we want to. We can walk out of there and be completely different if we want to. That's the idea. Women don't need those kinds of experiences as much as men. They are naturally more spiritual than men. And I also have to acknowledge I'm a little embarrassed talking to women as a teacher. That would never happen in the old days. Especially not an elder like you, Selma. Thank you for being here. My friend Selma Sparks, a journalist from New York City, who's semi-retired here. If you want a blessing, talk to Selma. Or better yet, take her dancing. And so here we are in the summertime. You know, the sun dances are always held in the heat of hot summertime. Usually it's solstice in the month before or after, you know, like there's one first year Sundance happening at Lake Lure near Asheville, I'm told, in August. And there's one first year Sundance in Macon, near Macon, Georgia this year too. So they're growing. They're these huge, powerful prayers where people gather around, you know, and pray together and add their prayers together using Tsangupo Wakan, a sacred pipe, the way it's been done millennia. And it becomes quite the energetic center by that eighth day. So, a Lakota story with multiple layers to it. And when you listen to a Lakota or any indigenous story, you listen with all your being, not just your ears and your mind. You let you feel the story. The difference in looking at a flower versus touching it and smelling it or eating it. So before the humans came, all the animals knew exactly how to live. Only the humans don't know how to live, not born with genetic programming about what to do. All the other animals come into life having a pretty clear idea about most all the basics and a lot of them, everything. And so before the humans came, the animals had it a smoother ride, you might say, generally speaking. But one day, it started getting colder. And it hadn't gotten that cold before in anybody's memory. And it kept getting colder. And the animals started commenting on it, you know, like, geez, you know, the sun's out, but it's still cold. What's the deal, you know? And it just kept getting colder. And then this little white flakes of stuff started falling out of the sky. And they were like, what is this stuff? You know, look, it melts into water, you know. And it's getting colder. And it started like piling up on the ground. And the animals were really getting worried and concerned. Never seen this stuff before. And the little mice and chipmunks and stuff started climbing up on the backs of the raccoons and rabbits and stuff to get out of the snow. And it kept on coming down. Soon the raccoons were climbing up on top of the wild boar and so forth. And it caused quite a commotion, and it was soon terrifying. And so they had a big council, big animal council. I've been witness to an owl council and a mountain lion council, personally. But this was all the animals sent their representatives. What are we going to do? And they said, we got to send somebody with the talk to the creator, you know, and ask what to do and ask him to stop this cold. So who should we send? Of course, someone said, owl. Send owl. He's the wisest. He can fly. You know. Then somebody said, but owl's nocturnal. He don't fly in the daytime. This whoever flies up there has got to fly in the sun right towards the sun. You know. So owl's not the right one. Then somebody said, oh, coyote, he's smart, he's dependable now. And they were like, no, he plays tricks. He might swallow the cloud and burp it up or something, you know. Coyote's not a very good choice, you know. And it just got, you know, more, everybody's getting more and more worried as they ruled out one after another, you know. And they were like, oh my God, what are we going to do? You know, like no one seemed right for the job. And then from a high tree flew down Rainbow Crow. Now, in this day and time, rainbow crow, where the modern crow's version originally had rainbow colors on, beautiful colors, and a beautiful singing voice. In fact, the most beautiful singing voice of all our two-legged feathered friends. And everybody's like, yo, crow, rainbow crow, yeah, you're perfect for the job, you know. Thank you for volunteering. And, so he said, I'll do my best. So for 4 days, he flew up, 24 hours a day, up. He had a real marathon, you know. And finally, he gets up to the creator and says, creator, you know, I got to talk with you about something that's really important. Creator says, I don't have time right now. I've got other things I got to do. Sorry. We always think about that kind of thing not being possible, you know, but in this case, that's what happened. Crow got up there, creator says, I can't see you right now. I've got these crises I'm dealing with over here, you know. So Crow thought, I can't just fly back down and tell everybody. He said he was too busy. Maybe if I sing. So he said, start singing. Oh, Great Spirit, please help us, oh good spirit in the sky. You rule the earth from way up high. You make the mountains large and small. You are the ruler of it all. You make the wind and clouds to blow. You make the snow on earth below. Oh great spirit in the sky, for you I sing this lullaby. Oh, Great Spirit says, oh, that was beautiful. Okay, what do you need? I'll give you a minute. All my friends are down there. We're going to die, I'm afraid, in mass numbers, because there's this snow, like falling stuff from the sky, and it's getting colder and colder. Would you please stop the cold? Great Spirit says, no, Crow, I cannot stop the cold. No, the cold has a spirit of its own. It's a sovereign entity just like you. It goes where it wants to go, when it wants to go there. I don't tell it to do anything. He says, well, what about the snow? Can you just stop the snow, maybe? No, I can't stop the snow. I can't stop the wind. I can't stop the cold. But I can give you the gift of fire. You take it back to your friends. Tell them to gather all the sticks off the dead hemlocks, the bottom dead limbs off the hemlock tree. When before the woolly adelgids came, for those of you who don't know, you could get under a big hemlock and stay dry in a hard rain. It was so big. Limbs sloped like that. So the bottom limbs on hemlocks are always fire starters. So he said, you know, get a bunch of those bottom limbs off the hemlocks here. Tell your friends to gather them, put them in a big pile, and I'm going to give you this 4-foot-long stick with fire on one end. That's the only time I'm giving it to you. Don't mess up. I don't have time for these kind of problems. See? And he has this 4-foot stick with fire on one end. He starts flying down. And he realizes if he flies too fast, it's going to go out. So he's got to go down about the same speed he came up, or the fire's going to blow out. You know? And so the first day, he's got, you know, almost a 3-foot long stick at the end of the first day. And next day, a little shorter. Then the smoke's starting to get in his face and turning his feathers darker colors, you know. And then by that last day, the stick's about 6 inches long and it's getting in his mouth. And I mean, he's having a hard time just keeping going. And all of his feathers are black as they are as you see them today. And he's just coughing and snorting and all, and he's got about a 3-inch stick by the time he gets down there, just black and charred all over his face, and he coughs out the instructions, and all the animals bring the hemlock branches, and he says, keep it going, don't let it out, you know. And so they made shifts to keep it going, and all the animals gathered around, and they were very grateful, and the crow flew up in it to the top of a nearby tree where he could get a little bit of that warmth and be on his own. There he cried, because what had made him special was how beautiful he was in this beautiful song. And he knew how things worked. It'd probably be future generations would look and sound like him. All he could do now is just go, caw, caw, caw. Yeah, when he used to have such a beautiful singing voice. His rainbow colors were all just black could be, you know. And he's just bawling away up there, you know, and none of the animals even notice him up there, you know, bawling away. And Creator notices him. And he comes down and says, hey, why are you crying? Well, look at me. I'm all black now. I can't sing anymore. I used to sing. I don't sing anymore, you know. He says, oh. But you've been given the gift of freedom. Because the two-leggeds are coming with no feathers. The humans are coming. And when they get here, they're going to capture the beautiful birds and put them in cages just to look at them. But they're not going to bother your people. You're all black. Just plain black. And they're going to put birds in cages that aren't so pretty that have beautiful singing voices just to hear them sing. They're not going to bother your people. Because you don't have that beautiful voice anymore. And they're going to, believe it or not, kill and eat a lot of their birds and other animals. But not your people. Because your meat's going to taste like smoke and fire. For your selfless giving, taking care of your friends. You've been given the gift of freedom for you and your people. And not only that, because you have so much awareness of others, your people will be the highest consciousness bird. You'll live in a family. All your people will take care of one another's children, unlike the other birds. And you'll live in a close-knit community. And you'll be so smart compared to all the others. And if you look closely at your black feathers, when the sun hits them, they're full of tiny little iridescent rainbows. just as beautiful as they were before. And that story says so much about us humans. Oh, and of course, all the animals celebrate. The crow, that, gave him lots of respect. And personally, when I came back from my very first exposure to traditional ceremony, I didn't even know there was such still going on. I went to a psychology conference in Atlanta at a great big hotel, and there were two women standing in the center of this big ballroom with the big round table. It's like a dozen chairs at each table, and this is the very beginning of a three-day conference on resisting the takeover of our work by managed care companies, what we try to resist that. And something nudged me to just, these two women seemed agitated, concerned, worried, upset about something, and I gathered they were in charge of the whole affair. And a little inner nudge, which I always follow, you know, said, go introduce yourself, offer to play the flute sometime this weekend for them, you know. So I go up and I do that, and they grab me, they literally grab me, you know, and said, oh, you got a Native American flute in your car? I said, yeah. They say, go get it, because we were debating about whether or not to have a blessing for the flute or not. Some people would be offended if we had it, some would be offended if we don't. Everybody would love the flute. Go get it. So I played the flute, and afterwards, up walks this Native American grandmother in buckskin. Just walks out of this group of psychologists and says, Sio, Siwaja. I said, She said, Sio, Siwaja. I said, I'm sorry, I don't speak the native language. She said, well, the lady said you're a Native American. I said, yeah, both my grandmothers told me they, you know, were like Cherokee Creek and Choctaw and their mother. But I don't speak the language. She said, do you know about the gathering in Vermont next month? Gathering in Vermont. No, I don't know anything. I don't know anything about gathering in Vermont. No. She hands me a card. Says, here, I'm Pond Lily. Call me if you want to know more about it. There's an elders gathering in Vermont next month. Call me if you want to come. Okay. So I two or three days later, called her, you know. Oh, yeah, I remember you. You were the guy that played the flute. When did you start playing the flute? 1976. Oh, okay. Well, why do you want to come to this gathering? And I said, well, I have always been really, really close to nature and like indigenous ways and all. And he said there was going to be like teachings by elders and ceremony. And all that sounds fascinating. She said, are you on the Red Road? I said, no, I'm not on anybody's road. I was brought up a Baptist, and then I was a Unitarian, and then I was in Ekankar. And now I'm just in the nature and playing my flute and running and gardening and fishing. And she said, so you're on the Red Road? I said, no, I'm not on the Red Road. I thought the Red Road meant the native way, the indigenous way. And we went back and forth like that about seven times. Finally, I said, I'm just on the path of my own, of soul, of myself. You know, I'm on my own path. She said, that's the Red Road. And I said, oh, okay, well, I'm on the Red Road. She said, okay. And then she gave me directions, you know. And I probably cried a gallon of tears in that 4 days there. Got to have my first wet lodge ceremony in Nipitaka, Wahupaja. The ceremony to renew the spirit is that really is the translation for it. And I got to play my flutes for everyone there. There was at one of the gatherings, the head grandmother was going to give a talk, and she had to go do a healing ceremony for a friend who was delayed 1 hour. So for 1 hour, I had about a dozen flutes there, and I just played one after another. And I was standing in the west where the grandmother sit, and I about 30 minutes into it, I look over at one of the grandmothers, and she was rolling down. It felt so good to know I was a part of that. And I just had so many experiences there, it just blew my mind. I'll tell you about one of them was the coming of age ceremony. I noticed the whole time there were women about 13 years old were making these buckskin dresses with the grandmothers, you know, the whole time. And the last day, they were going to have the coming of age ceremony. So it was in the evening, right? And I'm sitting in the west with the grandmothers. I was so close to my grandmothers. Both my grandfathers died before I was born. And my father was an angry, violent World War II Army sergeant. My mother was a saint. But she was very scared of him as I was, so I didn't get... Anyway. So this coming of age ceremony is in the evening, and I'm sitting here in the west with the grandmothers, and the wet east entrance is where they come in, and on the on the mountain behind them is a cloud, and the sun's setting behind us, and just as the drum starts up, and the young ladies come in their beautiful long trim fringe dresses, fringe sliding out, you know, as they're spinning and all, just as they're coming in, that shower on the mountain behind them makes a double rainbow over the entrance to the arbor. So they come in under this double rainbow, and about a dozen butterflies and a dozen dragonflies come in and dance with them. And two or three of them had three-year-old little sisters, and children are never shunned away at anything ceremony-wise. They're closer to spirit. They haven't been in their body so long, so they're teachers, just like LGBTQ people, they were considered special and sacred, and schizophrenics as well. You go to ceremonies, you'll see people that you don't see in normal everyday world, like maybe severe autism or facial deformations, whatever. Everybody knows they're welcome to ceremony, and they're not, don't have to be monitored because it's often in their life, you know. So anyways, here's these about a dozen young ladies, you know, spinning in their beautiful long dresses, you know, and the two or three three-year-old little sisters are out there laughing and running and playing among them, and all these butterflies and dragonflies and the double rainbow. They line up in front of the grandmothers, you know, and one by one the grandmothers take the microphone if they want to talk, you know, and they say stuff like, okay, all you boys, listen up. Oh, by the way, while they're dancing, the whole group is standing up like this under the arbor. And grandmother said things like, okay, all you boys, listen up now. These are life givers now. That's not your sister. That's not your cousin. That's not your friend. These are life givers. From now on, you don't speak to them unless they initiate a conversation with you. If you're sitting at the dining table and you want the mashed potatoes in front of your sister over there, you say, Mom, I wonder if my sweet sister would pass the mashed potatoes. And ladies, if any boys in this group speak to you without you initiating a conversation, you know that's someone you don't want anything to do with. That's the level of respect due to the life givers. That's why we're in this mess we're in now. Lack of respect to the women and to the woman we all came from. And the neglected woman is not all the men. And the sweet wise grandmother is not all the men. Playful little girl running amongst the flowers inside all the men that are forgotten and neglected. There's all kind of ways to walk on this earth, and they all offer beautiful lessons. I like to point out to people who think they're pretty special, sometimes myself, that I envision a continuum of consciousness, a continuum of consciousness about 100 yards long. On one end of that continuum of consciousness is a single electron, On the other end of that continuum of consciousness is the Creator. And every gradation in between, right? And if you look at it closely, the range of consciousness of humans on Earth is about 1/2 inch on that continuum. The lowest consciousness human on Earth isn't that far beneath the highest consciousness human on Earth on that full continuum. And the highest consciousness human on Earth can go from that highest state of consciousness to being the lowest state of consciousness human on Earth in as long as it takes to change thoughts. So none of us are very far ahead of anybody else. And a few Caucasian males and a much smaller percentage of women are about the only ones that even think in those kind of terms. We're all in this mass of consciousness. Evolving, looking at one another, looking at ourselves, growing. And we should be celebrating that mutual growth and expansion that we all came here to play together and grow together and laugh and love and grieve. When the illusion of separation occurs, when someone drops their shell, that illusion of separation. That first morning when I found that place in Vermont, I found it way out in the middle of nowhere. It was on Mi'kmaq land, the Mi'kmaq tribe that always owned it. And I arrived about 10 p.m. and pretty much everybody was in their tents. And so and it was a light rain, these misty Appalachian rains, you know, was falling, so magical. You know, I sat at my tent amongst the other tents and woke up. At some point later, I forgot to bring a watch and I forgot to bring a flashlight. Pretty important things to forget, right? And so I woke up and it was still completely dark, the rain was still falling, but I could barely hear singing off and on in the distance. I was like, what is that? What am I hearing? And I said, I gotta find that. Yeah. So I got dressed and I'm walking through the forest in this misting rain, total darkness, no moon at all, following my weak ears. Before I realized I needed hearing aids to try and find the source of this singing, you know. And it wasn't, you know, like when you heard that Sundance song, that was a shock to your system, wasn't it? That wasn't what we were expecting. You know, it's like totally foreign to the modern ear, you know. It brings back ancient memories for all of us. So I'm hearing that kind of sound, but without the drum, you know, this unusual music off and on. I'm walking through the forest, and I don't know, I can tell I'm getting closer and closer, and then I come upon a little pavilion with four picnic tables, and there's this native grandmother and about 15 people there, you know. And as I walk up, she's finishing this song, and she says, I'd like to thank everybody for coming to this volunteer meeting. You know, at this table over here will be the people working in the kitchen, if you would, and this table will be the ones working with the children. This will be security, and whatever the fourth one was, I don't remember what it was now, you know. And so she says, okay, so before we get started, we're going to invite our grandmothers, our ancestors to help us with this. And I'm going to sing a song to invite our ancestors to come and help us, you know, as volunteers here to help everything go smoothly, you know. And you might want to invite your grandmothers and great-grandmothers and great-great-grandmothers and so forth to come and help us, you know, with this. And while I sing. So I had never thought about that before. Like I said, I grew up very close to both of my grandmothers. And they were both wonderful. still have one of their braids in a box on my altar. So I invited them, you know. Okay, I did what the lady said. Grandma, you know, Grandma Weason, Grandma Bush, you know, and your mom's in here. Welcome, come help me, lady, you know, come help me. And just all of a sudden, boom, there were my two grandmothers, just as real as any of you right now, on either side of me. I had my eyes closed, but I could feel their presence like never before. And then for the first time, I thought about their mothers, and all of a sudden, I was surrounded by like 20 very familiar women, all around 40 years old in their appearance, who loved me and supported me and had always been there. And that's when I realized that idea of our grandmothers being our spirit guides and guardian angels and all that wasn't just a sweet metaphor, but complete reality. I was more in that dimension with them than I was the physical dimension, and I don't know for how long, but gradually I began coming back, hearing the grandmother talking. I came back, and water would run off my beard, and someone had thrown a bucket of water in my face from the tears. And no one seemed to notice, or if they did, it was no big deal. And I was just, I mean, that's a transformative experience. To know that we really are guided and protected by all these beautiful, sweet, mostly women working with other people. Hey, this one needs a lesson in this. You know, that kind of thing. We got a lesson over there. Shall we get them together? You know, it might take 20 years learning about that experience, you know. And then we're like, oh, I lost all my beauty and my beautiful singing voice. That hurt so bad. And our grandmothers are like, do you have any idea how long we worked to bring about this experience for you, to make you a better person? And we're always whining, why me, when they've worked so hard to bring about those lessons. And we think it's such a terrible thing what we're having to go through, but there's a huge payoff. We're safe, we're protected, nobody's going to put us in cages to hear us sing or look at us or eat us, you know, like the crow. So, we're so blessed. And we're infinitely connected in the web of life with all the living things, not just on this planet, but with all the living things on all the planets. Over 2 trillion galaxies of planets. Now think for a moment about what you wrote on your paper and see how that might relate to anything you heard today. I know I got my answer. So we say, welcome to conquer future battle. Thank you very much. And saying to you, welcome to conquer. Okay, whatever's next.